Physicians for a National Health Program has published a summary of Medicare Advantage overpayments that shows how so-called MA plans are making huge amounts of money from taxpayers and Medicare enrollees. James Kahn is a retired professor of health policy at the University of California at San Francisco and an editor and blogger at Health Justice Monitor. He spoke with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg.
Medicare Advantage overpayments, what's going on there? I haven't heard such good things about Medicare Advantage to begin with. Is this just something on top of that?
It is. There are a lot of problems with Medicare Advantage, but one of the biggest problems is that Medicare Advantage, that is to say the Medicare Advantage plans, which are private insurers, have figured out how to manipulate the payment system to earn lots of extra payments. And I use the word earn advisedly. It's not really earn, it's to capture vast overpayments. And what happened recently is that Physicians for a National Health Program assembled all of the estimates of the ways in which Medicare Advantage plans game the system. And the result was a total capture of excess funds that is an astounding amount of money. There are some uncertainties in any estimate like this, but the amounts are certainly over $100 billion per year. This includes attracting less expensive enrollees, so people who, even when you adjust for their diagnoses, are less expensive. And this comes to about $44 billion a year. In the jargon of my field, it's called risk selection, finding people who are less expensive. Another $20 billion goes toward upcoding of diagnoses. And so people who might have had one questionable diagnosis of congestive heart failure are coded as having congestive heart failure, even though no one's doing anything because it's not really a real diagnosis for them, or it's not a consequential one. So that's $20 billion. And then there's $24 billion in geographic and quality score pay bumps. Well, these quality scores don't actually mean anything. They're just gamed. They have no clinical meaning or consequences. And finally, there's some technical issues in how traditional Medicare is used to set the payment rates. You add all this up, and the Medicare Advantage plans are bringing in an extra $106 billion a year, maybe even more than that, but conservatively, $106 billion a year. To put that in perspective, that amounts to about $2,240 per Medicare Advantage enrollee per year.
And where's the oversight on this, if any?
Well, I think what it comes down to is that the people at the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, known as CMS, which administers Medicare, they're outgunned. They're outgunned technically or legally in the sense that even though the CMS folks have done some of the best research on these overpayments, they're confronted with legions of lawyers and technical experts in the private insurers who manipulate the system. One example of this recently was that the CMS folks a few months ago proposed an adjustment to the way that diseases are coded to avoid the overcoding, to correct for the overcoding. And they proposed doing this in the first post-COVID year of setting the payment rates. And the insurance companies pushed back very hard. And the result was that the insurance companies, for pushing hard for a few months, got back $10 billion in overpayments that CMS knew about and asked for correction, but lost that battle. And this brings me to the other way that CMS is outgunned, and that is the private insurance companies have tremendous influence in Washington, tremendous political influence through lobbying and donations. This certainly includes the Republican Party, but unfortunately, it also includes many, in fact, most Democrats. They are getting lots of money from the private insurers. And so when CMS is trying to do its job, its oversight job, and they have the technical chops to do it, they are prevented from following through on their technical findings by political pressure from Congress. And so, again, I just want to emphasize CMS has done really good work to understand these problems. And there's a special advisory group that's been around forever called MedPAC, which is the Medicare advisory group. And MedPAC also is, you know, convened by the government as an advisory group. They know exactly what's going on. They have done some spectacular research, but getting the Congress and the administration to support CMS in adjusting some of these things is really difficult. I will say also that until PNHP assembled all of these estimates in one place, it's a little hard to add them up. You know, I knew about the risk selection. I knew about the inflation of the diagnoses. And I knew that these private insurers were also getting geographic and quality bonuses. But to see it all in one place and add it up, and it comes out to more than $100 billion a year, more than $2,200 per enrollee per year, it's just stunning. It is an unbelievably huge scam.
Would it be better to get rid of Medicare Advantage altogether?
Absolutely, it would be better. First of all, traditional Medicare, which relies on direct fee-for-service payments to doctors and hospitals, is a much better buy for the taxpayer and for beneficiaries. So we should be doing
more. You think that conservatives would be able to sell that to their constituents, right? Saving money?
Well, conservatives are very influenced in what they think and say by the insurers. So the argument has been for decades that if you let private insurance companies work within a fixed a budget per beneficiary, it's called a capitation rate. If you let them provide quality health care, they can save money and improve quality. And there may have been a few instances of that, maybe Kaiser in its early days, but that's not how it's shaken out. You look at the performance measures, Medicare Advantage plans in general do about the same as traditional Medicare, maybe better on a few measures. But when people get sick in Medicare Advantage, they have trouble getting care and they leave. That's part of the risk selection problem. So that people get sick, they go back into traditional Medicare, in which it's easier to get care. So they've been gaming the system. But the myth that was promulgated decades ago with limited data and has been counteracted but not dropped, the myth is that somehow or other, these private insurance companies can skim off a bunch of profits and still reduce expenditures and improve quality. And they keep saying that. They keep arguing that they're doing that. But this kind of analysis, which shows that actually they're spending huge amounts of extra money, which goes largely into profits. Meantime, there's no evidence that the outcomes are any better. And in some cases will be worse and care will be harder to get. Really, what it says is that there is no advantage to Medicare Advantage. Traditional Medicare would be better, but the real solution, of course, would be to completely revamp the system and go to a single government payer like there are in many other wealthy countries and let the government pay for healthcare, let the doctors and hospitals and other health professionals deliver care and get paid by the government. The system we have now is crazy fragmented. Within Medicare, you have this distinction between traditional Medicare, which could be improved, and Medicare Advantage, which is horrendous in the ways I've mentioned. You also have scores of other government programs and hundreds, if not thousands, of private insurance. So now, it used to be 15, 20 years ago, if you were insured, you could count on being able to afford your health care. And now being insured is not enough because the high deductibles, it can be $5,000 or $10,000 or more, before the insurance kicks in. It's completely inadequate. And then both the private insurers in the employer market, so the insurance people get at work, plus the private insurers in the Medicare market are creating these narrow networks where there are limited numbers of physicians people can go to. The lists are often inaccurate. So you think you have access, say, to a hematologist or a neurologist, but when you call that person, they're not in the network or not taking new patients, or sometimes even not alive. So sometimes these lists include doctors who have passed away. So it is a major scam, this Medicare Advantage piece of it, $100 billion plus, is a big part of the problem, but it is also not the whole problem. Very similar phenomena with the job-based insurance. And of course, this doesn't even get to the issue that about 10% of adults are simply uninsured.
Have you taken your findings to Congress yet, or is there an opportunity to do that? Or would it matter, given what you've said previously?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, I personally, certainly the relevant congressional staffers are completely informed on all of these issues, which I'm talking about congressional staffers from the more progressive side of the Democratic representatives and senators. Certainly there is a critical mass of our elected officials who are support real change, real regulation of Medicare Advantage, and really the most important thing ultimately is system reform to a single payer. Bernie Sanders, of course, has introduced his single payer bill, had I think about 20 co-sponsors, not 100% sure of that number. Pramila Jayapal in the House with her single payer bill had about 120 co-sponsors, so not enough right now to prevail, but very good levels of co-sponsorship. And importantly, polling of the U.S. population shows support for single payer. If you ask the question fairly, if you say, would you like the government to be responsible for paying for health care if your taxes would have to go up, but you would no longer have to pay premiums, deductibles, or cost sharing? If you ask it that way, support is about 2/3 of everyone. So it's higher among the Democrats, and there's actually a surprising level of support among Republican voters when it's explained that way. So there's a continues to be huge interest in this, and of course, I have to acknowledge massive opposition from the insurers and others who would lose out financially. But that's, to me, there are two angles of attack in Congress. One is to improve regulation of Medicare, in particular Medicare Advantage, and to establish some important principles like negotiate for drug prices. And as you and your listeners know, the Inflation Reduction Act that Biden signed into law includes a modest but not trivial element of drug price negotiation, and that's working its way through the rulemaking process. And recently, the initial drugs to be for which the prices would be negotiated were announced. And so that's part of it. But the other part is to keep our eye on the prize, which is universal coverage with a single government payer that would assure that everyone is covered from birth to death with really good insurance. And importantly, with the same insurance. Right now, part of the problem is everyone's got different insurance. So you go to the doctor's office and you spend half of the visit trying to figure out what's covered and what isn't. Maybe the doctor prescribes a medicine and you go, well, that sounds good, doc, but I don't think it's on the formulary for my insurance. And then everyone has to scramble, figure out what other drug might work. All of that goes away when everyone's covered with the same insurance, the same formulary, and the savings, the annual savings in simplified administration of the system are on the order of $700 billion. That's not only getting rid of the profits, but also just making the paperwork an order of magnitude simpler.
That's the problem. It would just be too simple and direct. It makes too much sense. Never work.
That's the problem. It makes too much sense. I hear you.
Although I remember whenever single payer is brought up and the example of Canada is given, the pro-private insurance people will say, but those people in Canada, they have to come here to get their surgeries. They have to come here to get their special treatments because the wait is too long and it's too frustrating in Canada, even though most Canadians support the program.
Right. Canadian support for their single-payer system is far higher than equivalent measures in the United States. And while it is true that it's certainly historically some Canadians have come for very specialized treatments here, you've had an equal or even greater movement of Americans, U.S. residents, citizens, moving to Canada to get their treatment. And so if you ask people in the U.S. if they like Canadian-style single-payer system, like I said, if you ask the question in a fair way, about two-thirds will say yes. If you ask Canadians, would you like U.S.-based or U.S.-style healthcare, they break down in tears and run away.
Anything else you want to add?
Well, what's the latest? Well, I think it's, you know, actually important to recognize that an icon of American sports, Mary Lou Retton, who was a brilliantly successful gymnast and was the first, I believe I have this right, the first woman to appear on the Wheaties box. She recently was diagnosed with a serious type of pneumonia, and she's basically going bankrupt because she doesn't have the insurance required to get her care. She had to set up a GoFundMe. And I think what's unusual in her case is not that she lacks the money to get care. That's unfortunately pervasive in the U.S. What's unusual is that here's this national hero, a role model for young women to become serious athletes and show what they can accomplish. This role model has now been put through this terrible common situation that normally affects only the anonymous common person. Now it's hitting someone so prominent. And I hope this serves to wake us up to just how completely abysmal our insurance system is. Got to keep fighting.
That's retired UC San Francisco professor James Kahn speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on November 21st, 2023.